Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Want to speak for yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you what to expect in tonight's Rockets-Warriors showdown. But we start with last night's playoff games. All right, Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic should switch nicknames. Embiid is the Joker. Jokic is the process. That's the takeaway from last night's NBA playoff action. Embiid is turning himself into a big joke, and Jokic is at the center of a four-year process in Denver that is headed for a massive payoff. On a night when the Philadelphia 76ers needed Embiid to duplicate Michael Jordan's flu game, the 7-footer moped around the court for 31 minutes during a 36-point loss to the Toronto Raptors. Embiid scored 13 points and turned the ball over 8 times. He should have stayed in bed, sick. Late in the game, TNT cameras captured Embiid sitting on the bench staring at a stat sheet. Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley roasted Embiid.
I was thinking about when I played for the great Phil Jackson, the great Pat Riley, what they would say to my team at this point in time. And they both had the same tendencies. In a game five, in a game that you need, they would come in. We would see stuff on the board when we get there. You know how you get there early? Right. Then they erase it. And then they both would say, can you step up to the challenge? If you want people to remember the process forever, you got to step up.
As a star player, you can never show weakness. You got to keep the other guys involved in the game. That's what he does. He complains so much about being sick, he drains the energy out the room.
Well, as expected, Sixers head coach Brett Brown had a different take. He defended Embiid. Take a listen.
I'm kind of disappointed, like he gets shook around to me too much. Like he's trying to play for us. He's trying to get out of bed with a significant temperature and come represent the organization. I think it's grossly unfair, some of the criticism that he gets. I don't understand that.
All right, Embiid is 24 playing in his third NBA season and has been rather inconsistent in this postseason. His numbers are all down from the regular season, and it appears the league's gatekeepers have tired of his hey, look at me social media act. Embiid wants to be Shaq 2.0, a fun-loving giant. Problem is, at age 22, in just his third NBA season, Shaq put a penny on his back and carried the Orlando Magic to the NBA Finals. Shaq's play always outshined his contemporaries and his diesel personality. That's not the case for Embiid. Out west, there's a 24-year-old 7-footer playing in his fourth NBA season who is unintentionally putting a clown suit on Embiid. Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets routed Portland in the TNT nightcap. Jokic finished with 25 points and 19 rebounds. All of Jokic's postseason numbers are all up from the regular season. Big Honey is doing his best work on the big stage. Without the fanfare and the social media preening, the Nuggets embarked on a four-year process centered around Jokic, a second-round pick from Serbia in the same 2014 draft class that saw Embiid selected third overall. In Jokic's rookie year, the Nuggets won 33 games. They won 40 the next year, and then 46 the following season. This season, the Nuggets won 56 and made the playoffs for the first time in 6 years. It's been a slow, steady process that has culminated with the Nuggets looking a bit like the modern-day version of Bill Walton's Portland Trailblazers. I'm not calling Jokic the next Walton. Jokic isn't nearly the defensive force that Walton was in his too brief NBA prime. But Jokic does elevate his teammates the way Walton did. Embiid elevates Embiid. The joke right now is on Philadelphia's process. All right, joining the desk now is Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher of Bleacher Report. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
You being too hard on Joel Embiid?
Absolutely not. He wanted this. He loves attention. I'm guilty as well. And my grandmother used to say, once you call for attention, baby, you can't hang up. And think about it. Think about it. Once you want the smoke, don't start coughing now. Yeah, right on cue. Look at you over here. You wanted this smoke, Joel Embiid, going at everybody, you know, trolling them, clowning them, and doing those type of antics. Like you said, Shaq 2.0. Shaq went out there and said, game speaks first, and then everything comes because of that game. And because he came into these playoffs injured and now he's going to leave sick. Those inconsistencies and the lack of production at critical times is why we're on his head right now, as we should be.
I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm a dean at the University of Body Language.
Okay.
So I'm a little upset at some of the interpretation about what's going on with Embiid and what it means, particularly from our friend Charles Barkley, is he's sucking the energy out of the room and all that. Mm. I don't know, any time a guy is injured or is ill of health, to determine exactly how much that's affecting him is always a slippery slope. I don't know. I don't know how he feels. I don't know how much it's affecting him. The fact of the matter is, he has played. And to this point, I haven't heard him make any excuses. He has demonstrated that he's ill. There may be some indications that he's ill. But if he's not saying anything and he's going to suit up and he's going to try again, I'm going to give him that. The big issue that I have is the comparison between Embiid and Jokic, because we happen to have back-to-back games where one guy wins going away and the other one gets stuffed, because I don't think that that's a fair comparison. When I look at the teams and how they're built, it's not even. This is a team built for Jokic to shine and to do what he does. This is not a team built in Philadelphia to take the most
advantage. That's incredible. You got to blame Philadelphia Magic. They've had a process, and he's been at the center of the process, but it's not built for the process?
Actually, the process was stopped halfway through. Now, I've never been a believer in the process, but they took the keys to the car from Sam Hinkie halfway through the process. He demolished it, he got all the assets, and then they said, thank you for your service, we're gonna do the rest of it. I do not like the way this team is built, and I especially don't like the way it's built around Joel Embiid. You cannot play Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid together and think that you're going to get the best out of Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
My issue, I guess, a good friend of mine is a minority owner with the Sixers. And a couple years ago, I told him, I said, the biggest challenge you're going to have with Embiid is he's going to try to be a star too much. And that's the thing. And that's the thing I talk about a lot about that, is that he can't do that. So the process is there, but he has to – I think Embiid has to get himself in better shape, first of all. A lot of this is on Embiid.
He looked good in that video, though.
Oh, he looked ripped.
When he was
summertime.
On stage, he looked ripped.
I think a lot of it, he has to get in better shape, to me. I'm going to demand a lot more out of Embiid. Listen, 141 games, I think it is, 410 games, he only played 158 in 3 years that he's been there, okay? Some injuries you can't control.
Right.
But being in shape and being ready to play is something that you can control. And again, the Philadelphia 76ers had to figure this out. I think it's too early to kind of break it up, but they had to put more demands. And Embiid has to come in better shape for me.
Not too hard on Embiid, the criticism last night and from others.
Well, no, because you're the star of the team, okay? Once you dress up, you say you're ready to play, anything you do, you're going to get criticized. If you have a great game, they're going to love you to death. If you don't play well, they're going to say, that's just part of the business.
Rick, the one thing I don't understand is, why is it unfair? These both guys are 24. They came out in the same draft. One went in the second round. One was the third overall pick. They're playing for two franchises that hadn't had, and I know they tore it all down in Philadelphia. Hmm. But to see these guys and where they're at now, 4 years later, at age 24, why can't I compare them?
Well, you can, but I feel as if a lot of this is being built off of last night and last night's particular games. If I look at Joel Embiid's overall ability, he is a better player than Nikola Jokic when healthy and without injury. He is capable of doing more.
His postseason numbers, not just last night, his postseason numbers this year, all down from the regular season. Jokic's numbers all up from the regular season. It's not a one-off.
Okay, but who is he playing against? He's playing against the Portland Trailblazers right now that have Enes Kanter. I'm looking at a Joel Embiid who's playing with Jimmy Butler, who's a ball hog. Ben Simmons, who's a point guard who can't shoot and isn't always aggressive. And Tobias Harris, who you got through midseason and you're still trying to
bring into. Is Mutombo playing center
this
for Toronto? Or who's?
No, no. But if you're asking me who's the better player, Marc Gasol or Enes Kanter, Marc Gasol by far. And then being able to bring a Serge Ibaka, the depth that Toronto has. My great issue with Toronto actually has been that they have not been taking full advantage of Joel Embiid not being 100%. Last night was the first time where I saw Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka really assert themselves. They should be doing that throughout if Embiid's not 100%. But he's playing against far more difficult talent in Toronto than Jokic is facing.
I think we know where Rick stands.
With Portland.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's interesting, before we even go deeper into that comparison, I guess, is the fact that you brought up Shaq 2.0 and how you said, hey, don't try and be a star too much or too soon. It's amazing that in 2004, being out here in Los Angeles and watching them have to go through the riff of Kobe and Shaq, and they chose the younger, more stable, healthier, more invested player, but not the better player. And remember, there were conversations about, oh, Joel Embiid is untradeable if anybody is Ben Simmons. When I heard that, I said, they have that one backwards. Even if Ben Simmons doesn't have a jump shot, you still got to invest in the guy who seems like his focus is a little more into this. You disagree?
Well, I putting Ben Simmons next to Kobe Bryant as the choice is where I get a little nervous.
No, it's not those two, because he's not Shaq.
I understand what you're saying, though. But the more durable, the more consistent player,
more invested
over the guy.
Rick, and this is more of a football phrase or cliche, but availability trumps ability.
I get it.
And Joel Embiid is very unavailable. And so, again, I think, and we know where you stand, but I'll start with you. I think between these two, Nikola Jokic is, I think he's the future of big men in this league. And trust me, it took me a while. Earlier this year, I was laughing at the thought of even talking about Jokic on this show.
Right.
But I'm watching this dude in the playoffs, and there's something real here.
He is a unique talent. I don't think he's the future, and I think we're going to get into this.
Big man. That's where.
But for me, look, I get it with Embiid. I hate giving up on a young player who I look at whose problems essentially in my mind are maturity issues. If you can take some of the kid out of Embiid, I look at what he's capable of. Mm-hmm. I look that he's fearless when, give me the ball, I want to attack. That's something I can't teach Ben Simmons. You either have that approach or not.
Let's move off Ben Simmons, and we're just talking about Embiid and Jokic.
Fair enough. I look at the abilities that Embiid has, and I have grave concerns about his health. It's why he's got a 35-page contract. I'm protected. I'm protected when it comes to that. But I would rather have, when I see a guy, and we all know it, you look at a guy and you go, boy, he's got everything. I'd rather look at a guy and say, he's got everything. Let me see if I can keep him healthy and get him to the finish line. Then a guy I look at and go, boy, that's nice. That's unique.
And
but I can't believe that he's going to leave me someplace.
Well, I mean, Jokic has – here's the thing, too. It's time and situation. The situation in Denver is perfect for Jokic in regards to what he does as a player. Rarely do we see now the offense running through your post player. And they do that in Denver because of how the system is and because the guys are young and they're still trying to learn. My thing with Embiid is this, is that we talk about Shaq being an outgoing, fun guy. But when it crossed the line, how serious Shaq was, but Shaq's personality was like that when we were back in high school. But once he crossed the line, he knew when to shut that off and he was serious about his game. Now, as he got older, he got out of shape and things like that. But during his prime, Shaq was all about his business once he crossed the line. I think a lot of times with Embiid, and this is a challenge, and I said this from the beginning with the Sixers, of how do you allow Embiid to be Embiid, but implore him to be more serious about his business? That's what you have to look at. Year three, I say you got a couple more years to figure this out with Embiid, with his health, more importantly, with his attitude. If it doesn't happen, then you have to make a decision. But right now, I still think it's a little bit too early. But Jokic gives you the key to what a big man can do in the league when you have a skill set like that.
It's interesting talking to Shaquille O'Neal. Maybe this was 3 years ago in the summer, and he was talking about how his son is so different than him in the way he plays as a big. And we were talking about how things are in your imagination until you see it and then it's reality. And he was saying how he was stuck in the restricted area. He said coaches would yell at him when he got out of the restricted area. Mm-hmm. And then you watch the evolution. You see it go to a Garnett. And then you see it go to a KD. Then you see this unicorn Porzingis out there when available, and they just continue to stretch it. But now we're seeing a point center. Like, think about it, how it used to be a point forward was amazing. Now we're seeing a point center. So what's going to happen now is some kid who is trending that size is going to now have that available in his imagination and in reality. So, yeah, the future of big men is why let someone else facilitate for you when you can be the focal point of that offense?
Alonzo Mourning is a good friend of mine. And we talk about this. He talking about if I played today, I said, dog, you wouldn't be the same player.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because one, from the age of 10, 11, 12, 13, you're going to be taught to play on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be posted up. You're not going to have coaches that are, say, anchor yourself down on the block. Mm-hmm. So to your point, a lot of the bigs now that a lot of bigs that played in the past talk about how they are dominating. I'm like, no, you wouldn't. Because you would not be the same player growing up today because you'd be taught the game different. So to your point, I get what you're saying.
I think, and again, I don't want to compare this guy to Bill Walton in his prime because Bill Walton in his prime was a really special person. Defensively, offensively, the way he passed. But I do see some of those qualities in Jokic in terms of, he elevates this entire Nuggets team.
He's a thinking man's basketball player.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, and I love that. I love watching him play. But you talk about being in shape. He could use some of that, too.
A lot of that.
Well, and again, that's why it's only going to get better. He's just a kid.
Hold on.
You caught it, too. Go get him.
Wait, so Embiid can't he can't grow into being more serious about his job and his health. But the other kid is.
The other one's got – Embiid's got a personality that –
Jokic does too.
Showtime all day.
Yeah, Jokic is crazy too. Jokic even admits he likes to eat. He almost accepts I'm out of shape. Like, he got your body on my height. And he out there just running around like, that's not good enough. You've been in the NBA too long to be that guy still and take it. Like, he doesn't mind.
On that,
I got to think about that with my body.
Yeah, I like that.
How offended should I be on the
schedule? That was off the dome right there.
You know what's not smart? Job boards that send you candidates that aren't qualified for the role you posted or send you a mile-high stack of resumes to sort through. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/speak to hire the right person. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and actively invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, Speak for Yourself listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/speak. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/SPEAK. That's ZipRecruiter.com/speak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Time now for a big story. Let's move to Oracle Arena, where the Rockets-Warriors series will resume with Game 5 tonight. The Rockets couldn't steal a win last time. They were on the Warriors' home court, but they climbed back into the series with two gutsy wins at home, and it looks like they've got things trending in the right direction. With big jumps in scoring and offensive rebounds in the last two games, as well as some improved shooting, also important to note, Houston won both regular season games at Oracle this year, leading me to believe Houston's going to take control of this tonight.
Well, you know what's going to happen tonight?
What?
I hate to say it, man, but you want to go off of what happened in the regular season? I want to go off what happens in the postseason when they're at Oracle. And in the last 5 years, you know how many games Houston has won in Oracle?
Preach.
One. Uno. 1-10. You heard that? Tonight, 1-10. Suckers can't win in Oracle in the postseason. So I was going to come out here and get paid off a hunch, but I said, you know what, let me do some homework. And my homework told me that this team cannot travel and bring this same team on the road. We saw in the first two games, where's the toughness? Where's the energy? And then we say, oh, they hit the switch because they went home and the eye and the contusions and now they're ready. Guess what happens when they get on that flight, on that bird, and when they land in Oracle? Same old fate. I think Houston takes the L tonight.
The role players have had a big influence on how each of these games has gone, and the role players generally, traditionally, play better at home. This is my one reason why I believe there's a chance for you to be right, is that the Warriors are not relying on role players. In this series especially, they are getting, in game three, they got 38 minutes out of their bench. In game four, it was in the 40s. They are riding their starting five, their best five, hard. And we're now going every other day with games. Yeah. It's not back-to-back, but it's still the recovery period for Steph Curry playing 40-some minutes, Andre Iguodala playing nearly 40 minutes. I believe that as this series goes on, and tonight might be the tipping point, where the energy level, which was missing. I was at games 1 and 2. I will be there tonight. I was disappointed in how the Rockets played because I thought they could play a lot harder than they did, especially in game 1. But I wonder if they can take that. They understand, look, we can beat these guys off the dribble. We can be aggressive and get where we need to go. If they take that lesson from game 4 to game 5, then something might just happen tonight.
It'd be interesting to see. To me, we talked about the game planning wise for Golden State at the beginning, to see exactly what the plan of attack is. Because this Golden State team, especially at home, you see the point differential for Houston, 15 plus points at home.
Yeah.
So Golden State, how they attack Houston, to me, is going to be very important. Is it off the dribble? Are they trying to get into the paint, getting the ball up quickly? But yet, Houston has an outside shot because Chris Paul really hasn't played well yet. Mm. If Chris Paul utilizes, and this goes back to Mike D'Antoni too, allows Chris Paul to be Chris Paul, put the ball in his hands, even when James Harden is on the floor, allow Chris to kind of navigate a little bit more early, okay, in the game to get his rhythm, because Chris is so essential to what they do in the pick and roll and their half court set that I think he can be a difference maker if he's involved early. If you put him on the side and space him, then Chris is just there. Yeah. But to me, Chris has to have a bigger game, I think, on the road. Because you talked about the role players not playing extremely well on the road. Chris is not a role player.
No.
Chris is the general in, on the court. So he has to have a good game in order for Houston to walk out of here with that dub you talking about they go get.
I would prefer Golden State to win. But I just think something has gone on with James Harden. And he's activating. He's like, he's going to legitimize his MVP trophies. And he's tired. Everybody, KD is the best player in the league. And KD is. But I think James Harden in this moment, people kind of laughed at him with, you know, flopper and all this other stuff. And did his eyes really get hurt? People, idiots like me, question that. And I think this team, James Harden, has taken on a different identity. And I think you're going to see P.J. Tucker do it again with 12 or 13 rebounds, 6 or 7 offensive rebounds, outplay Draymond Green, who's not playing poorly, but P.J. Tucker for me is playing better. I just don't think the Rockets have to do anything special. They were in both games in 1 and 2. I don't think they have to do anything special to win tonight.
They don't have to do anything special, but they have to do something extra to make up for the fact that they had their issues in Oracle. So 7 consecutive games, 6 points or fewer, all close, right? No matter who wins, it's going to be close. And you brought up the greatest point, Chris Paul. And we know Chris Paul, in his mind, is a 1A alpha dog. But on this team, you can't be. James Harden is there. So I wonder, because they even highlighted a package of Chris Paul when he is with the ball and James Harden is disengaged, like, what are you doing? So is it being coached out of Chris Paul to be the two? Or is it being taken out of Chris Paul by James Harden and his body language? Because that's what you're seeing. And that's if they don't get something extra, if they don't get their Chris Paul we know, they're not going to win.
Or does Chris Paul still have the ability to dominate in that way? Because I have seen him at times drive and get into the paint and then pick up his dribble and get stuck in ways that I've never seen Chris Paul get stuck before.
Yeah.
But I will say this. When I look at the makeup of a Chris Paul, and I look at the importance of this particular game in this series, this is the time that Chris Paul says, oh, you forgot about me, and I'm going to come and show you. This, if there's ever a time, if Chris Paul still has it in his bag to be the player we've seen him be, he's going to recognize that this is the game on the road where we were in the game, games 1 and game 2. He missed threes. James missed threes. But we were right there. I'm not going to let that happen again because I don't want to have happen what happened last
year. This is where I disagree with you. I just don't think Chris Paul can play poorly and they can still win. He can play poorly and they can still win.
I can't see that.
Because James Harden and Eric Gordon are going to do enough offensively. And then while you throw in the intangibles that P.J. Tucker, again, he didn't play that well in these last two games and they won. And so I just don't think, I don't, the reason, one of the reasons why James Harden is sitting off on the side is like, hey, bro, we really don't need you right now.
Well, I think too, back home, I think Draymond is going to have more of an effective game and impact on this game at home. Okay? I really do. You look at Steph and Durant, they're going to get this. I think Clay, now you talk about, okay, let's take, you talk about Eric Gordon and Harden. Okay, we got Steph and we got Durant. Cancel those two. Right. Those two cancel each other out. I think where the game is going to be won is those people we talked about. I think Chris Paul has to be integral in there because I think they're going to figure out a way early in the game to get Clay more involved. You watch him come off screens early in the game. Watch him try to post up Chris Paul early.
You get him involved, you got to make the shot.
But that's okay. I think the point is to, you know, coaches know their players. Players know their teammates, okay? They know exactly how to get guys involved early because when they're going to need Clay, it's not in the first quarter, it's in the fourth quarter when things are tough. So they got to get him going early.
Don't you think he's been missing good shots, though?
Oh, he's been missing good shots because as a player, when I'm standing on the sideline and I'm not involved, mentally I'm not engaged. So when I do get a shot, I'm not as tied in as I was.
And I can't wait to get it up.
So that's why you go to him early in that first quarter to keep him engaged. So when you need him in the fourth, he's ready to go.
We're talking all offensive numbers.
Of course.
And roles for the most part. But to me, the attrition is going to be at the defensive end.
For Golden State. Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry being out there for 43 minutes and having to defend. And that's where Chris Paul does have to be aggressive. Because wherever the matchups are, you need, if he's on Steph, I got to go. Mm-hmm. And if James is on him, I got to go. The problem that I had in games one and two in Oracle was the fact that they messed around too much.
Yeah,
they waited too long into the clock. Mm-hmm. Keep it moving. Keep the pressure on Golden State because they're playing a short bench. And this, you may not win it in the first or second quarter, but come the fourth quarter, I just look at the Warriors defensively, and to me, that's where they are vulnerable.
Well, let's balance the math out and keep it simple for you, Whitlock. If Chris Paul can be a difference, but Clay and Steph combined 5 for 20 in game four, that's not happening again. So 25% shooting from those guys is not happening again. So even if we get more Chris Paul, you're going to get more Clay and Steph, whatever the combination may be. So Chris Paul's sitting there saying, this is my moment. And he needs a legacy moment in terms of playoff success. Let's go back to the Clipper years because of injuries, costly turnovers, mistakes. And then you get to last year, whatever you want to say, the hamstring. Like, there's a lot. You're talking about a monkey on your back in terms of erasing it in your legacy play. Mm. This is a moment for Chris Paul.
Let's move to the Lakers, who have yet to officially hire a new head coach, but are apparently shopping for assistance already. With Tyronn Lue appearing more and more likely to get the head coaching job, Frank Isola is reporting that both Lue and LeBron James want former Timberwolves and Bulls head coach Tom Thibodeau to join the Lakers staff. I actually think this is one of the most brilliant moves of LeBron's many moves here in Los Angeles. This is the Indiana Pacer fan in me. Yeah. We had Larry Bird as the head coach, and Rick Carlisle and Dick Carter were the assistant coaches, and they coached the team. Mm-hmm. And Larry Bird coached the attitudes and the emotions of the team, and it worked tremendously. Three straight Eastern Conference Finals, one NBA Finals appearance. Rick Carlisle was masterful. Dick Carter was masterful. I love pairing Ty Lue with a hardcore defensive X and O's guy like Tom Thibodeau. This is a great move, in my opinion.
And I can see how this move can go bad and be disastrous quickly. I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to flip that coin and realize that you can't serve two gods. So think about this roster construction. Are you trying to develop the young core, or are you trying to win now because of LeBron and his birth certificate? And that's been the issue with the Lakers. That's in part why they have the worst record in the NBA in the last 6 years. The worst team in the NBA has been the Lakers. Teams have tanked, went through process, and are now in the playoffs while the Lakers still continue to be out of the playoffs. So when you bring in a Tom Thibodeau to support a Ty Lue, what is Ty Lue there to do if he's not in fullness the head coach? Does he have final say? Is he just in charge of LeBron, or is he in charge of the young core and developing in that? If they're not on the same page, I don't see how this can work, because this roster construction is different than a veteran-laced Ty Lue team that he was used to in Cleveland. I think they're divided right now. Choose your course and then the actions of that course.
The dynamic of Ty Lue with Tom Thibodeau works in that you have good cop, the bad cop. It's the same as Doc Rivers being with Tom Thibodeau in Boston. So from that standpoint, and let's be honest, this is the only kind of job that Tibbs is going to get moving forward. He's not going to get another head coaching job. He was given everything you could possibly ask for in Minnesota, and it was a disaster. So this is a great way for him to rehab his image. To your point, this is where I struggle, is he was supposed to come in and coach up those young guys in Minnesota, especially defensively. You'd be asking him to do the same in this situation. Now, not being the head coach does take a little bit of the sizzle out of whatever he's saying, but nonetheless, he wasn't able to do that. And ultimately, that's what you have to do. I agree with you. The dynamic with the Pacers was perfect, but you had a veteran team. You had the Davis big men. You had Reggie. You had Mark Jackson. You had Austin Crozier. You had guys that were willing to do what you asked them to do. I'm not feeling that from this Lakers team at this point.
In Minnesota, Thibodeau had two titles, right?
Yes.
What were they?
He was head coach and team president.
Okay, so the dynamics were different in how he handled the players. See, Tibbs was my assistant coach in Houston. As an assistant, totally different. A little bit more laid back, easier to talk to. The communication skills were there. He really dug into getting to know the players and also the personalities, spending time as an assistant, which is different than what the challenge was at Minnesota because of those two positions. So I do believe that when you get a Ty Lue and a Thibodeau there, Tibbs' outlook is so different than what it was before. He can go back to being the guy he was. He's still hardcore, but he's a guy that can communicate a lot better on the level of the, even if they're young, because I think guys will respect that a little bit more because Tibbs understands defense. He understands what it means to be, you know, time and score and how to be in the right place at the right time and to get the guys to understand how the connectivity. That's why I say it's different now. And I played for him, and I know it, and I loved him as a defensive coach, as an assistant coach. I always thought he would struggle as a head coach because of that communication.
Yeah, but as a veteran, you bought in.
Oh, no, I bought in, but it was how he did it. He wasn't, like, when we saw him as a head coach in Chicago, Minnesota, it was just like this, okay? But as an assistant coach, the pressure wasn't on him to be able to do that, so his demeanor was totally different.
Rick, look, I think it's no different than looking at Doc Rivers when he was carrying both titles, president and head coach, and they finally slapped him back down to his level of competence, head coach, and now he's a brilliant head coach again. He's in the lane where he fits.
Yep.
Tom Thibodeau, a great in football coordinator, got elevated to head coach, and it was too much for him. Overpay him to be the assistant here, satisfy him financially, the Lakers, and a lot of credit if he can get LeBron James and this team elevated to a defensive. I mean, remember what a nightmare it was defensively for the Lakers. If he can elevate them defensively when LeBron's there on the court, he'll get a lot of credit.
I like it for Tibbs. And by it's Tibbs and Thibodeau. I always get that.
Yeah, right.
I like it for Tibbs. And for the options that the Lakers have and with Ty Lue, I'm good with that. It's a matter of what your expectation is that it's going to deliver. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be... Is it going to take it to where the Pacers were? I don't think it's enough.
LeBron is here next year to win a championship. Trust me.
Oh, well,
that's the only target on his board.
Well, they're not going to do that.
I know.
It's just like that's not even within reason. Like
he thinks they're going to get a player in here, and him and a player, and these young guys, and the right coaching will be right. He's looking at Portland right now.
Yeah.
Look like a real threat. He's looking at Golden State fall apart. And LeBron James is convinced, you get me one player and the right coaches, we'll be right there with any of these guys next year.
Look, if they get the if factor is just, we're way out of our universe right now. But if they get the right player and everything works together, because they do have talent in this roster, I absolutely agree with that. But I've always seen it through experience that when my coordinator, assistant coach is hardcore, but my head coach is kind of, you know, player friendly, you take a lot of sting out of what you're saying because I know where the buck stops, and it doesn't stop with you. You're not going to affect my playing time to the point where the head coach is going to sit there and say, yeah, I listened to you. So Tibbs what is the leash Tibbs is going to be given with this young core? And remember, they've went through so many different changes in styles and superstars. Some of these guys were there with Kobe Bryant, and now they're with LeBron. It's kind of white noise at this point. If the guy's going to do it, they're going to do it. If they're not, they're not. I don't know how much Tibbs is getting out of it.
Jim Jackson is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. Time to get antisocial.
I can't do it today. My man got on the medium over there. He might break out that thing. That
boy, go ahead, man. You got to give it to us.
Well, hating on me today, man.
No, that thing is like anti-social. That thing is better.
Real anti.
My right, man.
What's popping, Darnell?
Yes, sir. We're going to talk about a big box office blockbuster. The new Avengers movie has been a huge hit across the U.S. Mm. Just about everybody loving the movie. Mm. Well, apparently, Klay Thompson recently saw a screening and was not enthused. In fact, he walked out of the movie after 2 hours because the plot didn't interest him enough. Now, for me, once I spend that bread, I'm watching everything from the 15-minute previews to the end credits. But what's your philosophy on bouncing from the movie?
Mine is I bounce early and often. There's about
really?
50% of movies I go to, I leave early.
50%?
At 50%.
You go by yourself?
And I was about to add the amendment that if I'm by myself, it's 50%. If I'm with somebody, it's about 30% of movies I leave. Come on, baby, we got to
go. You got to go. Out here. She like, what?
Get her to agree, we out.
Yeah, right. There's only one movie I left her. I can't remember it, but you said he went to the screening, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he ain't had to pay.
He
got invited.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
So he was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm really not feeling this. I'm going to go ahead and bounce. Obviously, with the Avengers, you have to follow all of the movies in order to get the plot. So if you just jump in and not knowing what happened before, but it don't surprise me about Klay.
Nah.
Klay seemed like the kind of dude that's be like, man, I ain't with this, man.
Yeah. Not enough ladies in here. One. Two. Ain't nobody about to get that max deal? What the hell am I here watching these three-hour movies for? I've only walked out of one movie. I think it was called The Fifth Element.
It was
too spacey and weird for me. I just dipped on it. With somebody. I didn't go do what I had to go do. But I'm not into that. Like, if I spend my money, but this is free. But if I spend my money, I'm going all the way through that.
Yeah, I'm going all the way through. Free or not, if I'm there, I decided that I'm going to spend this time, I'm going to watch it. But I don't have a problem with them walking out. Anybody walking out. Me, personally, I'm not walking out and haven't walked out on any movie.
Man, I can go watch a rerun of Scarface rather than watching this.
You always go back to Scarface.
Always
go back to Scarface.
Next!
Let's get it going with the NFL, where Jameis Winston is headed into contract year and seemed extremely focused. Winston was recently seen at a golfing event sitting crisscross with a helmet on as a golf ball was teed off on his head. Twitter obviously clowned him for it, calling it another dumb choice. Bucks fans gotta be a little upset about his decision-making lately. Are you guys bothered by this?
Not at all. He's got a helmet on.
Yeah.
Guy's done it a million times.
Is it more dangerous than playing football, damn it? No.
But you get paid for that. You don't get paid for this.
Are they experts out there hitting
me? Is Barkley swinging that club?
This is what this guy does for a living.
He's trick shots.
He's done it with on the golf ball on top of a golf club. So this is actually easier for him. But just raising money for a good cause. James is just playing his part, man.
Stay off,
dude.
Stay off.
Stay off, James.
Good call.
Legs.
Switching over to some hoops, where Rockets forward P.J. Tucker was caught on video tossing his clothes on a member of the Rockets bench staff and received heavy criticism online for it. One person tweeted at the video, P.J. Tucker, this ain't it, bro. Treat the janitor like you would treat the CEO. This is so disrespectful. Well, P.J. Tucker pushed back with a since-deleted Instagram post saying, quote, he's actually one of my favorite kids. And if you look back at any other games, I wrap myself around him and another kid every single game. Shaking my head, the internet remains undefeated. Y'all think PJ deserves his criticism?
Hell no.
No.
This is how you should treat kids.
Come on, man.
Come on. See, I was with you all up until
that's how I was treated.
Man, get
that's how you should treat
kids. Only Whitlock was saying
that. You can't spank now, so they going to call child services on you. Spank now.
You can't spank or you can't get caught?
Well, you can't get caught.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I knew when I saw this he was going to get hated on, and I knew we were going to take it out of context. You've been in the locker room before. Some hazing, rites of passage. The youngsters come in there. You mess with them in a different way. I had one teammate, John Henderson, who actually used to ask a trainer,
to hit him as hard as he could in the face. Y'all saw that before, right? The flip of it. And sometimes you get into these weird relationships with somebody where y'all do stuff that other people don't understand. So, man.
I've been on a lot of teams, and with ball boys, ball girls, we all do something different. We play with them, we throw stuff at them, we might pour some water on them, but it's all in fun because we respect the job that they do. And I think PJ here, he knows this little kid. Right. He knows he does it all the time, but it just got caught out of context.
Yes, he has a relationship. If you watch the video, he gives him a high five
right afterwards.
So stop. Internet always takes things out of context. I hate it because we don't know the relationship that they have.
Exactly.
We don't know the dynamic. PJ, you cool.
Man. And that Christmas bonus that coming to that little
kid. What? You feel me?
That little boy winning every Christmas. I know it.
All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
All right, guys, we're going to take it to the Curry household where Steph's wife Aisha went on Jada Pinkett's show Red Table Talk a few days ago and talked about some of her insecurities of being married to a superstar. Take a listen.
Something that really bothers me and, like, honestly has given me a sense of a little bit of an insecurity is the fact that, there are all these women, like, throwing themselves, but me, like, the past 10 years, like, I don't have any of that. Like, I have zero, this sounds weird, but like male attention. And so then I begin to internalize it. And I'm like, is something wrong with
me? You're not looking.
Would you be okay with your wife saying this? You ain't married, but what you gonna say, Whitlock?
What you got?
Let's go.
I'm gonna keep it 1,000%. Yeah. One of the things in my 20s and even in my 30s, I used to put women on a pedestal and thought they were different than me. And then in my 40s and certainly my 50s, I was like, oh no. Anything I'll do, she'll do. And that's my whole philosophy.
You're doing it with somebody.
Yeah, anything I'm capable of doing and feeling, they're capable of doing and feeling. And so this doesn't surprise me.
Look, when keeping it real goes wrong, Aisha, guilty. My wife only wants my attention. At least that's what she says, right? And she's smart to say that. I have one issue with this. And it's not the woman, it's the wife. When you get into the wife identity, you got to understand that you shouldn't even have that on the radar. It shouldn't be a registration anymore.
Disagree.
But you disagree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's the problem I have with it. Because look, as a man, I have different roles and different responsibilities than I do as a father. When it's 8 o'clock and I'm going to bed because my son's going to bed, I'm sitting there, the man in me is like, damn, I could be out there with Jimmy Jackson somewhere going to get it, right? But the father in me is sitting there taking it like, you know what? This is what I signed up for.
Right.
That's the only thing, like, struggling with the identity.
My question is this. Because she's married to Steph in the limelight, is that the overlying thought process? If she was just married to Joe the policeman, would she be saying the same thing? That guys don't look at her?
Yeah.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I see, that's what I'm saying. I don't know, but a lot of times when you're in the spotlight like this, the camera changes you. The spotlight changes you. You start to look for things a lot differently. And me as a husband, I'm like, look, baby, you ain't gotta worry about that. Don't even worry about that.
Yeah, why is that?
Why is that even important? But again,
Why you got an Instagram account?
Who?
That's what your wife is saying. Why you got an Instagram account?
Depending on who I'm following.
I see who you following and liking on Instagram.
That's my brand.
The problem with this is all she's doing is creating more of an issue. On both sides, women are now gonna see her being insecure and they're gonna attack him even more. And then on the flip side, it's like she's opening a door for dude to come into her DM. Yes,
right now,
it's like you give me the invitation.
But
you
see,
don't
we
do that.
But we different.
No, we ain't.
I'm gonna tell you this. Tell me this. Women, when you're out, they will compete in broad daylight for your attention. Men just want to win. So guess what? They sneak macking. They know when there's opportunity and when there's not. Versus what she's registering is everybody just shooting a shot at Steph and missing. Don't underestimate dudes are sitting there like, oh, I'm waiting for my shot, but I know this ain't the time to shoot it right now.
But now they got their opportunity because they feel like the door has been open.
You know how dudes is. She go to the bathroom, he got to go to the bathroom.
Imagine
they bumped into each other.
Okay. Hey, what about this? See, this is the problem. You're right. You just opened up issues.
I'm telling you, man, that's true, right?
Why did somebody send me this tweet? They said, this is her in 2011, supposedly. Don't really need the men trying to holler at me at the car dealership. I'm engaged. Geez, off the market.
What? Hold up. Hold up.
This Twitter. Which way you want it?
That camera is as addictive as drugs.
Mm. Listen, which way you want it?
Listen, though, that's her at the beginning of their marriage. They're just
engaged
at that time. And so here she is 8-9 years later. Her husband, she's like, damn, he got the same wedding ring on as I am, and that ain't stopped ne'er a woman from hopping into his DMs and trying to throw themselves at. And just at some point, it's like, I think what she's saying is like, I want the equality of having that same temptation my husband has. I want to show him I'm just as strong and I can, because maybe, and again, I guarantee you she's had this discussion with Steph. Before she got on TV and said this, her and Steph have had this conversation. And maybe Steph says, you know how hard it is? You know how many women throw themselves at me? But I'm loyal to you, baby.
Yeah.
She'd like to be able to say that right back to him. I deal with the same thing, I'm loyal to you.
But why? To show that the effort shows more love and loyalty when I ain't got to deal with it, that's even better.
That's what some do. Listen, here's, and because I want to generalize about women, but when you start dating an attractive woman, and she's, particularly she's been attractive her whole life, she's been fed attention her whole life.
Oh, yeah.
And so when she marries someone high profile and then they get the attention, because, oh, that's Steph Curry. Instead of the, because again, every, the track of
Aisha whatever. Curry is starving for attention. Transfer that attention you're getting. She got shows. She got everything. Like, what? You know what the problem is? People who think Aisha has it all. You got the great family, well, yeah, the beautiful husband, all the money you can spend. And now you got this complaint when this is just on the streets in the hood complaint. Like I want some dudes to check me out of the car.
It's a human complaint to me because look at her mother-in-law. Woo. As beautiful as anybody that you've ever seen on TV.
That's what the problem.
She gets a lot of attention. Again, it's like, wow, she's dealing with a lot. She's just being too honest.
I think it's a private thought
that her and Steph have gone through, kept it a little too real, got too comfortable around some girlfriends, but I'm not gonna mock her. Craig Jennings back with us. Let's move to Cleveland, where the only thing crazier than an Odell Beckham's Met Gala outfit is what he's been saying about the Browns. Odell's been hyping the team nonstop since getting traded to Cleveland, and now he says he wants to turn the Browns into the new Patriots, and has even started comparing Baker Mayfield to Brett Favre, claiming the quarterback is already on his way to a Hall of Fame career. I don't understand what. Well, I do understand. Odell runs his mouth, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
But I think he's putting too much pressure on the team that just hasn't accomplished enough.
Well, we all grew up hearing talk was cheap, right? So how does cheap talk turn into pressure and expectations to a point where you can't live up to them? It's amazing that there are guys who are quiet, and some of those guys are good, and some of those guys are not good. There are guys are loud, some are good, some are not. Tom Brady walked out of the draft, sixth rounder, didn't tell anybody he's gonna be the GOAT, became the GOAT. Deion Sanders got drafted, 30 gold chains on, said he gonna be the GOAT, and was the GOAT at his position. So I don't get into the talk category. I think that you are gonna be, as Bill Parcells said, what your record says you are. Mm-hmm. You're gonna still play the game the same way, as long as you put your work in.
Yeah, I think he is bringing pressure to this team, but I think it's intentional. It's intentional because you have a lot of guys on this team, starting with your quarterback in Baker Mayfield, and then moving on to Jarvis Landry, and now Odell Beckham Jr., and the list goes on, of guys who are supremely confident in their not only individual abilities, but collectively in their ability to be better than their opponent. Period. That's what they believe. They don't believe in this record of 95 and 224 and one of the Browns history. They don't care about that.
Right.
They care about what's right now in front of them, and they see an opportunity where they've acquired a roster of personnel that says, you know what? We look pretty good on paper. Mm. Let's make it happen.
Okay, so he's off in New York or wherever, running his mouth. The people back in Cleveland are going through the voluntary workouts, all the other guys. And the media all runs into the locker room post-practice deal. Hey, what do you think about Odell saying y'all going to be the new Patriots? Baker, what do you think about being compared to Brett Favre? He's creating extra work, extra questions, extra expectations for everybody else. He ain't even there.
Mm, interesting. I mean, like, some guys just like to write checks. And they say, we're going to cash them when we need to. And it's a lot of people out there that believe that this team is going to be special. And what he's doing is, as you said, is that positive pressure, which is
football can get distracting at times. You could think it's so much going on, but in simplicity, it's win your one-on-ones. It's beat the guy in front of you. You beat the guy in front of you. You do it. You do it. We did it. Then we got some success here, and I think that's what their belief is.
Yeah, and I also think, too, when we first saw and heard of this signing of or this trade happening with Odell Beckham going to Cleveland, the first opinion was, oh, man, he going from New York to Cleveland. So in his mind, he wants to make sure everyone knows, look, I'm all in. Mm. I don't care where I'm at. My talents, they transfer to wherever I'm at, and I'm going to produce
I'm
wherever
I'm
at. I'm
all in from New York.
I mean, no, he's all in from his personal training. It's look, yeah, just because you got a new coaching staff and a new organization and all of that things, you have an extra mini camp. You have an extra opportunity to get hurt, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking that extra opportunity to injure myself in a time where it don't even matter. So I'll wait. I'll continue to train and customize my workouts to benefit me for the long haul. And that's what he's doing.
You know what's crazy? If Odell went to Cleveland and didn't talk the talk, we'll say, oh, he's in that small market now. Oh, you know what? He's changing because, you know what? He's not really happy where he is.
Yep.
He's suppressing all his emotions. Can't win in that situation.
All right, to Philadelphia, where there was an outrage a few weeks ago after Donovan McNabb said the Eagles might need to move on from Carson Wentz if he can't lead them on a deep playoff run in the next couple of seasons. Well, now McNabb is pushing back against his critics, saying it's not just his job to tell people what they want to hear.
If I'm an analyst and a question is presented to me, I'm supposed to answer it the way I see fit, being truthful, right? And sometimes when it's certain people, we want to judge it or we want to kind of have a different type of emotional feel to their answer because of who it is. And that's unfair.
Yeah, I think part of his issue here is like he thinks because he's a former Eagle, whatever he says about the Eagle carries an extra weight. I kind of want to start with you, Greg, because you faced this with Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. I kind of agree with Donovan. I don't think we should be harshly criticizing him because he gave his opinion on the Eagles.
Not at all. This is the misconception that fans, that even former teammates, co-workers, whatever, if you've had a relationship with someone or you've been a part of an organization, the misconception is that I'm going to always say the positive about them. Mm. I'm not going to tell you fact. I'm not going to be honest. I'm not going to be truthful. And the reality of it is he's just telling his opinion, his truth from his place of experience. It's not some off the wall, what credibility do you have? No, Donovan McNabb has all the credibility in the world to give his factual opinion. And if his truth or my truth doesn't align up with what you believe, so what? So now you're mad at me because I'm giving you an opinion of something that you just want me to agree with you with? No, it's not going to happen. Because if he were talking about the Cowboys saying this about Dak Prescott, every Eagles fan out there would be like, yeah, tell him, Donovan. Yeah. But because it's home base, it's touchy-touchy because I have a relationship with these guys. No, you're not. Don't talk about family. Hmm. Well, whoa, how is family going to ever grow if I don't really tell you truth?
Mm. Preach, man. The truth hurts. And the people closest to you hate the truth because it hurts the most.
It hurts the most.
It's just that simple. And what he's done is what happens in families and friend circles all the time. It's the fact that if you tell them the raw, uncut, dope truth, they're going to take it heavier and harder than anybody else. But let's switch the uniform. If someone outside the family tells you that, now all of a sudden you get the proper response. And to me, that's wrong. McNabb is sophisticated enough to know that that's coming with the territory, but also never muzzle yourself in those moments because you got to tell the truth.
I'll put it as simple as possible. If you have a friend and their breath stinks, and you say, my man, your breath stinks, they going to be upset like, bro, you going to just tell me my breath? But if you have that same friend and their breath stinks and you don't tell them and somebody else comes up to man, what's going on with you? And you've been with them the whole day, they going to look at you and say, bro, how come you didn't tell me my breath stinks?
Yeah.
But when I tell you your breath stinks, you have a problem with me
don't
telling
trip.
You.
Yeah.
So you want it on your terms. So it's a lose-lose.
The other thing is, I don't even think what he said was all that controversial. It seems pretty obvious.
Yes.
Carson Wentz has had an injury history. And if he doesn't, and Nick Foles has stepped in and done a masterful job, won a Super Bowl, took him on a little bit of a playoff run this past season, if Carson Wentz doesn't produce, there is a problem in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's displaced aggression, psychology 101. You're going to transfer it to, oh, you're bitter. Oh, you got an axe to grind. Oh, that's why they traded you and cut you. Like, we all hear it, but you know what? Donovan, keep being you, man.
Yes.
Keep doing you.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, before we go, I'd like to say a few more words on Jalen McKenzie, the junior high football star killed by a stray bullet in East St. Louis late Saturday night. Yesterday, Dallas radio host Ben Rogers reported the Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott, a St. Louis area native, has volunteered to pay for McKenzie's funeral. It's a thoughtful, generous, and kind gesture. It is also now part of the tradition of high-profile black murders. A black celebrity pays for the homegoing. It is the least we can do. But do we owe McKenzie and the thousands of other black boys murdered every year more than a well-financed funeral? The leading cause of death of black men between the ages of 15 and 34 is murder. According to a 2011 CDC study, homicide was the cause of 40% of all deaths among black men between 15 and 34. For white males, the number is less than 4%. Murder is an epidemic disease among young black men. Paying for funerals doesn't mask the symptoms or raise awareness around the crisis. It is not my intention to denigrate Elliot's compassion. We know, had McKenzie been slain by a white police officer, half the NFL and all of the NBA would have been outfitted in Shoe Company and Colin Kaepernick-approved T-shirts decrying racial injustice. Every rapper in America would be locked in a studio thinking of words that rhyme with McKenzie. We would make Jalen McKenzie as famous as Michael Brown, the Black Lives Matter icon from Ferguson, Missouri. We would use McKenzie as a symbol of an injustice we would no longer tolerate. We would be invited on every TV talk show possible and be granted the opportunity by a white host to express our outrage and smugly proclaim white America is uncomfortable with this conversation. We would engage in a week-long national discussion about a toxic culture within our police departments. But since McKenzie is just another black boy from the hood gunned down by his own, we'll generously pay for his funeral and keep moving. There's nothing to see here. There's no toxic culture that profits from celebrities and celebrates and promotes black violence and self-hate. We don't struggle to see our own humanity. That's all crazy talk. Don't you know my shoe company told me to lean in and put on this equality T-shirt? We're fighting toxic masculinity. Are we really? Last time I checked, the toxic depravity that killed Jalen McKenzie falls under the umbrella of toxic masculinity. All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher are back. Let's move to Toronto, where the Raptors are now just one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals after drubbing the 76ers in Game 5 last night. Kawhi Leonard has been every bit the superstar Toronto had hoped for, and it sounds like he might be sticking around longer than anyone thought, with ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that Kawhi re-signing with the Raptors is now a serious consideration. Marcel, I've got some tissues here for you.
Tito, I need a tissue. Yeah. Jermaine, stop teasing.
You believe that he could actually stay in Toronto?
Yeah, I've always believed that. I mean, it's not breaking news, love you, Woj. Not breaking news to say he's seriously considering it. If you're somewhere, it could be between the spectrum of 1% and 99%. It's never 100% and it's never zero. You're there. And we saw this with Paul George. He was at 99%. He went up to the organization in Indiana and said, I'm going to the Lakers. He was at 99%. Then they said, oh, we got something for you. Send your butt to OKC. And then all of a sudden that started to dissipate. Right. The same thing's happening here. But what's different here is you need to see something change in terms of expectations for him to change his heart. His heart is in L.A. Toronto's going to be a good team. Toronto's always been around this second round Eastern Conference Finals team. Can they get over the hump? If you exceed expectations and show me that change, maybe he'll stay. But I'm still thinking he's coming home.
Yeah, it's almost with any of our decisions. Yeah. And I'm sure, Jim, you've been through this a lot going to various teams. Is you look at certain elements, you go, man, that'd be nice. I'd like to, and just in a prison, I'd like to play there or I'd like to live there. And then you get down to the nitty gritty of, okay, what are the schools like? Where am I going to live? What's the cost of living? Who am I playing with? Who's the coach? Wait a minute, man, let me think this through. Right now, I would hope that he's seriously considering staying in Toronto.
Thank
because
you.
It's never going to get better than where they are right now, which it looks like they got to be potentially going to the NBA Finals. A lot of this is going to depend ultimately on what do the Clippers look like?
Right.
Because they have room for that second max contract. How am I going to compare what I have with the Toronto Raptors in the Eastern Conference versus what the Clippers are ultimately going to be able to put around me? And he's not going to know that until this whole process is well past where they are now.
Well, the beauty about, I think, Kawhi is that because he's been silent, we don't know. We can't put a bead or a read on what he's thinking, what he wants, what his aspirations are. So he keeps you in the dark from that perspective, and it's always tougher as a former player to kind of go into the mind of a player and say what he should do. Because I don't know him well enough to understand his background and what he really wants. We know he wants to win.
Yeah.
We know that. I think the path maybe from an all-star perspective may be a lot easier in the East, okay? Mm-hmm. Not to say he didn't do it in the West, but the East is now more competitive. Toronto is still building. But yet and still you have the other side where people are talking about, well, he wants to be back in, in L.A.
Yeah.
I don't have a clue because I can't get a read on what Kawhi wants.
And it's doubled down by the fact that he's in Toronto. Because normally if he was in New York, if he was in L.A., if he was someplace where there are a lot of people around him that get a feel for how he's feeling, who overhear him, man, I can't stand this weather, or, man, these taxes are like, hear things that might be turning him off about Toronto, that would feed the narrative that he's not happy there and that he's looking for something else. The fact that he's in Toronto, there aren't all those street agents that are going to be providing that information. But the fact that we haven't heard anything to this point is an encouraging sign. I've always thought that Toronto was a possibility, but I still think the Clippers are in the mix too.
There you go.
There it is.
Tissue.
Uncle Jimmy's here. What are your thoughts so far on the show, Uncle Jimmy?
First of all, you will not refer to me as thy government name. You refer to me as Bishop Jimmy Tutu. That's my name. That's what you refer to me by.
Bishop.
You big dummy.
Okay.
First of all, let me tell you something. The big dummy of the day goes to the brother that said that no matter how, what you think, there's another woman out there nasty enough to do what you want to do.
Basically.
Ain't that much nasty in the world, Jason. And you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Oh, boy.
He's doing it with somebody, though.
Big dummy. Himself.
Here's a highlight.
Visuals.
Our discussion earlier about Joel Embiid. Embiid is 24 playing in his third NBA season and has been rather inconsistent in this postseason. And it appears the league's gatekeepers have tired of his, hey, look at me, social media act.
He loves attention. I'm guilty as well. And my grandmother used to say, once you call for attention, baby, you can't hang up.
All right, Bishop Jimmy Tutu, you have a take?
First of all, I would like to say that I'm here solely for the purpose of defending my brother, Joel MDB.
MDB.
See, I would like to say that, first of all, I feel that you and the members of the media, you attack my brother unjustly. You give him, you attack for him for things to which the young brother is not responsible. You understand? You colonizers. You have taken him and you have assimilated him to your ways of life. Your ways of life has taken its toll upon my brother. In our country, we do not have things like Popeye's chicken or Kardashians. These are the things that has taken its toll and ravaged this young brother's body. In our country, we know nothing ravages a man's nature and his strength more than Popeye's chicken or Kardashians. You don't believe me. You don't believe me. You choose to giggle and poot? Listen to me. I give you example. Where was the last time we saw a Mr. Tristan Thompson? No, see him. Christian Humphries can't even get a spot on the big three. I hate to say this, but our own brother, our own Reggie Bush, I cannot make him run on Madden anymore. Do I need to say more? Yeah. What about the one, Mr. Kanye?
Yes.
One moment you go from Jesus walk to slavery as an option? My brother, what the hell? You are stuck on stupid, sitting up on, wait a minute. Now, this brings me to the point to which I really want to make. Mr. Charles Barkley, Charles Barkley, you look at me in my eyes. I want to tell you, shut your suck box. You will not speak well of the big women of my country. You do not know the big women of our country, they are the oak trees that bear the fruit. And I need you to know that we, the men of our country, we have to have the strength of a rhino to satisfy our women. And I'm saying to you, Charles Barkley, have you ever walked into a party, stood in the middle of the room, put your finger in the air and said, now, who wants to sex Mutombo? Until you've done this, Charles, until you've walked a mile in these shoes, you shut thy face about big women. You know nothing about this life. This is how we roll in our country of Wakanda. And this is spoken by my good friend, Nelson Mandingo.
I'm not.
Man, damn.
What a fool. Ever goofy. Oh, man.
I'm done with you, man. I'm
sweating over here. Listen to this dude. We got TV.
We got. Listen, I want to do my approval. I can't believe it.
I'm going to put my finger in the air. I'm married, but still. Aisha Curry style. I'm going to put my finger in the air.
My approval rating for Joel Embiid.
Oh, Bishop.
I hate to do it to you, Bishop Jimmy Tutu, but I got him at a 47. Damn. 10 job performance, 4 all-time greatest, 22 character, 11 authenticity, a 47, a scout team.
You got him starting on your scout team. I got him sixth man on my scout team, a little lower. Basically, the only difference I would say is I had to drop that character a ton. Who calls their coach, text them at 6 in the morning? Hey, you know what, tonight, I ain't gonna make it. Like, that's the problem with me. That's low character, man. Wait till you get there. So, all bad, man. Cold, flu, suck it up. Let's go ball, brother. Sorry, Bishop.
Yeah, I'm out here playing hurt.
You are.
I mean, Joel Embiid. You got anything else? Bishop Tutu? Nah, never mind.
Don't let him go no more.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.